Welcome to Real Talk. I am Ambassador Curtis Ward. My special guest on this episode is someone who works tirelessly to end human trafficking in the United States and around the world. Shamir McKenzie is a consultant, activist, subject matter expert on human trafficking, and a sought-after, award-winning, internationally recognized speaker and trainer. Turning her past adversities into an opportunity to liberate and protect others, Shamir has brought about social and political change in America and around the world. Shamir has a strong passion for education and policy and is the Chief Executive Officer for Sungate Foundation, an anti-trafficking organization that provides educational opportunities for survivors of human trafficking. Additionally, Shamir serves as a training manager for the National Human Trafficking Hotline. Shamir is also the co-chair for the Victims Services Committee of the Maryland State Human Trafficking Task Force. As a former program director, Shamir authored an anti-trafficking program from the ground up and oversaw an emergency residential program for adult survivors of human trafficking. In 2018, Shamir responded to a call from the Ministry of Justice in her birthplace, Jamaica, and currently serves as the first appointed anti-human trafficking ambassador for Jamaica. Shamir works tirelessly to raise awareness on human trafficking by speaking at universities, conferences, community events, and consulting with government officials around the world. She has trained a variety of professionals on how to identify and respond to victims of human trafficking, including the FBI, Homeland Security, Bureau of Diplomatic Security, churches, hotels, and airline staff, to name a few. Her lived experiences with sex trafficking have been featured in several books, including a college textbook focused on social justice. In addition, Shamir's story has been featured widely on television, radio documentaries, and in blogs. Her most recent documentary was released on the island of Aruba on September 25, 2018, entitled False Promises. The documentary serves as a tool to educate youth in the Caribbean about sex trafficking. Shamir has contributed to anti-human trafficking laws through collaboration with state and federal governments, including giving expert testimony in the Maryland State Legislature and the U.S. Congress. In 2015, Shamir graduated from Loyola University, Chicago, with her Bachelor of Science degree in Criminology and Criminal Justice. Additionally, she serves on several boards and advisory boards and speakers' bureaus and have received numerous awards in recognition for her work. And I must end with this. Shamir does not consider herself a victim, because she's no longer enslaved. She's not a survivor, because she's more than surviving. But she considers herself a liberator, one who has broken free from the chains of her past, determined to pave the way for others who have been enslaved. Shamir McKenzie, welcome to Real Talk.
Good afternoon. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure and privilege to have you join me on my podcast. you are in such great demand. You have been making such a huge difference, not only here in the United States, but in the Caribbean and around the world. As a matter of fact, I had the privilege of being on a team with you in 2017, doing some training of airport workers in Jamaica.
Yeah.
And also Seaport. I remember we had some training at the Norman Manley International Airport, mm-hmm. at the Donald Sangster International Airport, and at the Ocho Rios cruise port.
Yes.
And I saw your professionalism and your expertise up close. Again, welcome. Now, Shamir, I have said all this stuff. Where exactly would you like to start in terms of putting in context the whole issue of human trafficking? I let you take the lead on this.
You know, you brought back so many memories from 2017 in Jamaica. I really want individuals to understand that human trafficking is real. Human trafficking is happening in our communities. It's happening in our countries. It's a global phenomenon. Oftentimes, people confuse human trafficking with other crimes. They confuse it with crimes like human smuggling. They confuse it with crimes like sexual abuse or kidnapping, right? But human trafficking is, while it's a very complex issue, and the definition, if you look it up, it's a really complex definition. I want to simplify it for you. It's the exploitation of human beings for someone else's profit. The exploitation of human beings for someone else's profit. When we talk about trafficking, that word trafficking has a Italian origin, right? It's derived from the Italian word traffico, which simply means commerce, right? So when we put human trafficking together, we're talking about human commerce, right? The sale of human beings. Right. And it's important to understand that when we're talking about human beings being exploited for someone else's profit, it doesn't always involve money. Right. It's anything of value that is exchanged for that person. It's also important to note that it doesn't always involve movement. Right. One can be in their house and be trafficked. You don't have to move in order for it to be trafficked. So if you see a situation to identify if the problem is trafficking, we should ask ourselves, one, is someone being exploited? And two, is someone profiting from the exploitation?
You have brought your own experience to your work. And that has elevated you to another level of expertise when talking about this subject. But as you said, you are no longer enslaved. Explain what you meant by that, because some people do not really understand that human trafficking is a part of enslavement, is a sort of enslavement.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you should research human trafficking, they also call it modern day slavery. When we look at slavery and we look at the similarities with human trafficking, there are some similarities and there are some differences. And some people do not like using the term slavery as it relates to human trafficking because they don't believe that, they think we're not doing justice to the individuals who were enslaved during those times. But there are some similarities that I draw on where victims, they're given a new name by their trafficker, similar to that. when we're talking about colonial slavery. Victims work long hours for little or no pay. So when victims are being exploited, right, when we understand trafficking, trafficking is the umbrella term. And under that umbrella, there are two major forms of trafficking, labor trafficking and sex trafficking. And when we're talking about either one, we see victims who are exploited for long hours with little to no pay, right? The conditions under which they're exploited, similar to that of colonial slavery, right? They are subjected to competing pressures by their trafficker, similar to how slaves on the plantation were subjected to competing pressure by the master, right? So there are, when we're looking at those similarities, they are still present, right? When we understand one was enslaved during colonial slavery, they didn't have the ability to leave without serious harm or repercussion. You couldn't just walk off the plantation and say, "Hey, master, I'm done. I'm leaving," right? And that's
not at all.
Right. And that is the same way that we see in human trafficking. Victims can't just leave. Right? They cannot just leave without serious harm or repercussion, because the trafficker will say, "I'm coming after your family. I'm coming after you." Right? They are threatened with deportation. "If you should try to leave, I'll get you deported." When we're talking about labor trafficking, they're threatened with blacklisting. Right? "You are working in America, and if I will get you deported and ensure that no other organization will hire you to come back and work here." Right? Their documents are confiscated. Right? So when we're talking about trafficking, it's important to understand that, yes, there are some similarities. And I strongly believe it is slavery. It's slavery. It's modern day slavery, slavery by another name. And let's not forget, right, when we're talking about trafficking, there's no such thing as a single issue. Intersectionality is at its core. And when we're talking about intersectionality and we're talking about these other issues, we're also talking about racism, right? So now we can draw and see why some people wouldn't want to identify human trafficking as slavery, because slavery for some is uncomfortable. They can't comfortably speak about slavery. For whatever reason, that's not what we're talking about today.
That's right.
But we can understand why some don't want to regard trafficking as human trafficking as slavery.
Oftentimes, there is also a link between human smuggling or immigrant smuggling, or a link to human trafficking. Sometimes it starts out as smuggling and ends up being trafficking. The smuggling generally is where the individual pays the smuggler to get them from one place to the next. But I've seen cases, many cases, where it begins that way, but the smuggler from the very outset had no intention of delivering the individual to a place where they would be safe, but turned them over to traffickers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe tell me, how do you see right here in the United States the nature and the extent of human trafficking here in the U.S.? And then I want you to then tell me, how do you see, answer the same question for the Caribbean?
Okay. So I want to clarify smuggling and trafficking for those who may be confused with regards to the two. And human smuggling and human trafficking are two separate crimes.
Yes.
Right? Human Indeed. Smuggling is a crime against the border. Right?
That's right.
This is where individuals are trying to evade, right? Immigration, right? At the border, right? For human smuggling, the relationship ends at the destination.
That's right.
When we're talking about human trafficking, this is a crime against a person. Right. And the relationship continues at the destination. Right. And as you said earlier, we do have cases that start out as trafficking, as smuggling, and then turn into trafficking. Right.
Yes.
We see the issue in the Ukraine right now with that unrest there, that there are traffickers present trying to recruit people.
Absolutely.
And when we understand trafficking and understand its origins, and we understand that traffickers exploit individuals or people's vulnerability, right? And you look at the situation in the Ukraine where those individuals are in that vulnerable position, we can see how easy traffickers can come in, sell a dream, sell an opportunity, right? In the name of help, and traffic someone. When
Absolutely.
We look at human trafficking in the United States, the hotline that I work for, the National Human Trafficking Hotline, that is owned by the Department of Health and Human Services, but is operated by Polaris, they have the largest data set when it comes to human trafficking in the United States, right? And the reason for that is the data that they have is based on the calls that come in to the National Human Trafficking Hotline. You know, when I travel around the US, people say to me, my state is the number one state for trafficking. And I like to say, how do you know that? Because we don't have any hard data to show what state has the highest number of trafficking.
Why did they make that claim?
Huh?
Why do they make that claim?
Based on the report that comes out from the hotline. So when the hotline put out a report about the data, they are talking about states that have the highest number of calls for trafficking that come into the hotline. And people often get that confused. And when we're talking about the data that comes to the hotline, that is not always inclusive of data to the FBI, local law enforcement, or other cases that are not reported to law enforcement, right? So we cannot really put a hard number to say, this state have more trafficking than this state. We can only discuss numbers and data based on the calls that come into the hotline.
Okay. And how widespread is human trafficking in the United States?
Well, human trafficking is the largest growing crime in the world. It's right next to drug trafficking, right?
Yes.
And gun trafficking. It's right up there. And when we're talking about trafficking and we're looking at drug trafficking, drug traffickers are leaving that industry and getting involved in human trafficking. And here's
yes.
why. The human trafficking is more lucrative, right? When you have a product and you sell that product, you got to go get more product. When you have a human being, you can sell that person over and over and over again.
Oh, my goodness.
In addition to that, if you have drugs and you're pulled over by the police, right? The police can identify, hey, this is drugs. This is how many kilos of whatever. Right. When you have a human being that is living in fear, they're threatened, their family is threatened, and they're told if you tell anyone that this is happening to you, there are consequences for that. If the police pulls over that car with a trafficking victim and a trafficker, how likely is it for law enforcement to identify that that person is a victim of trafficking?
Unless they are fully aware and trained in what the signals are that they should be looking for, it's virtually impossible.
And even with training, because if I'm a victim and you know, when law enforcement pulls you over and the trafficker said, all right, the police is coming, you better pull a smile on your face, you better not have any funny business going on. And when the officer pulls up to the car, you're like, hi, officer, and you're smiling. How can that officer detect that something is wrong unless there are some other reasons why he feel that the people in the car should be questioned separately, right?
Yeah,
Yeah. There has to be a reason for him to say, there has to be a reasonable cause, as they would say, in the legal system.
And even then, because of the fear of the victim as to the repercussions that may fall upon their family members, they will be very careful not to give away any clues to the law enforcement personnel that they're being trafficked.
That's right.
The other question I have was, what is the nature of human trafficking? What is the scope across the Caribbean?
So human trafficking in the Caribbean is similar to human trafficking in the United States. When we look at human trafficking in the Caribbean, we are looking at individuals who are looking for better opportunities, right? We have, and I dare not call our Caribbean country third world countries. I believe we're developing countries, because in some aspects of the Caribbean, we are the leaders, far ahead of the United States in some aspects, right? So when we look at our developing countries, we are seeing individuals who are looking for opportunities, whether that's an opportunity for a better life, better education, to better their family, right? And traffickers, they don't come out and say, hey, I'm the big bad trafficker, come with me, I'm going to do this, 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 and that to you. That is not how they present themselves, right? They present themselves as nice people, as a legitimate opportunities, right? You have individuals who will present job offers to individuals, right? There are a couple of cases that came out of Jamaica, where individuals thought they were responded to an ad to work at a hotel, right? And yes, ended up being trafficked, right? So when we're talking about...
But they didn't land in a hotel, right? They landed elsewhere.
Elsewhere, right? And we're talking about individuals who have a desire to have a better life, right? These are ambitious people that the trafficker will assess and say, okay, you want to do this? You want to do that? I have this opportunity for you.
And they exploit all those vulnerabilities.
And then they exploit the vulnerability. Correct.
My goodness.
And when we're talking about trafficking too, we have to understand it's when the trafficker sometimes is not a stranger. The trafficker can be a family member. We have parents who traffic their children, grandparents, fathers, uncles that traffic their parents. We have people who are in a position of power that traffic individuals, teachers, pastors, childcare workers, who are in positions of power that traffic individuals.
And that is a total disgrace. And unfortunately, it happens. And my next question, therefore, is... how much are Caribbean governments doing to curb human trafficking? Are they doing enough? Are their capacities limited? What is the nature of efforts across the Caribbean to deal with human trafficking?
Well, there's always room for improvement, right? In everything we look at, there is always room for improvement. But what I can say is when we look in the Caribbean, that agencies, specific agencies, are getting training to be able to recognize what human trafficking is and respond to it. Just yesterday, I was on a training with individuals that were from Trinidad, Jamaica, Curacao, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, right? These were individuals who were in hospitality, airport security, right, who were coming to a training to be able to identify and respond to human trafficking, right? And that is the first step, right?
Who was conducting that training?
This training was done by the Department of State Blue Campaign. The U.S. Department of State Blue Campaign was conducting that training, and I was a part of it along with some other individuals. But when I saw that and I said, these individuals are getting trained. We have individuals that worked at the airport, right? That showed up. We had Caribbean Airlines on there,
right, that showed up to say, I want to be able to identify and respond and know what I can do from my role as it.
I remember when we went to Jamaica in 2017, the enthusiasm among the trainees were fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They wanted to learn. They wanted to be able to identify victims of human trafficking so that they don't slip through their fingers. So what you're saying then is that capacity building, anti-human trafficking capacity building, is an ongoing process. But as we know, in all transnational organized criminal activities, the criminals, when they reach a certain roadblock, they find ways around it. How up to date are people like yourself in terms of trying to be a step ahead of the human traffickers?
So I think with technology, can hurt us, but technology can also be beneficial to us. And as these individuals are getting trained to learn how to identify and respond, we have to know that these traffickers are coming up with more creative ways to traffic individuals. But technology has played a role in really assisting law enforcement to be better able to identify trafficking, right? There is a initiative that I am aware of that where law enforcement goes in, right? And they just take the cell phone. They call it dumping the cell phone, right? Which really mm-hmm. means they take the metadata from that phone and analyze it to make the connections. Okay. Right. So a lot of us think, you know, when we delete something off the phone, it's gone. No, law enforcement can pull that. Right. Mm-hmm. So and that's called metadata. Right. When they pull that information from the phone, put it into a system, find out, see all the text messages on the calls and try to connect those dots. Right. So as we advance in technology, that definitely helps.
Even are the Caribbean countries up to date on some of these technologies, though?
Some of them, they are.
Okay.
I know definitely Jamaica is up to date on some of them. There is still room for improvement, as I said. But when I know a little bit about the work that's happening in Jamaica. And what I can say is that our officers connect with officers in other countries. They learn from others as to what they're doing and try to implement those same techniques and strategies and way of investigating in Jamaica.
One of the criticisms from the U.S. State Department is that there are not enough prosecutions. How do we respond to that?
It's hard. I'm going to say, if you understand the complexity of trafficking, it is hard to prosecute. It's very hard to prosecute, especially if we don't have a victim being willing to testify against the trafficker. When we look at just crime in general and the culture in Jamaica, right? In Farm of the Dead, we have that culture, right? The fear that's created from the trafficker to the victims, right? And when we're talking about just when we look at just crime in general and how people don't report crime because they know if I open my mouth, this can happen. Think about a victim who has experienced physical and psychological abuse at the hand of this trafficker. And now you're telling me I need to come in court. And we're talking about little Jamaica, right? You know, the radius of Jamaica. It's a small island, right? Where can I go and hide from this trafficker and his cronies if I should testify against him? Who's going to protect me after this indictment?
And protect your family.
And protect my family, right? So oftentimes we have victims who, you know, in their hearts, they want to cooperate. They want justice. But that fear of retaliation from the trafficker prevents them from doing so. That leaves our legal system, law enforcement and prosecutors, right, to try to come up with other techniques in prosecuting this trafficker. And oftentimes, they're slim to none. So when we're looking at prosecution, unless we're doing some wiretapping, and wiretapping is available in Jamaica, unless we get a tip and we're able to do some wiretapping or do some other form of investigation to get solid evidence, it's really hard to prosecute these traffickers.
You know, Shamir, you have a lot of experience dealing with this issue of human trafficking. And I know you've been called upon from time to time to testify before legislators as they are trying to craft anti-trafficking laws. I know you've been before the General Assembly in Maryland. You've been before the Congress. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with those legislators, and both at the state level and at the federal level, in terms of fighting human trafficking and trying to create laws to prosecute, to investigate them. Tell us a little bit about that.
So when we talk about trafficking, we can't point fingers. We can't point fingers and say, this is a presidential problem. This is Congress problem. This is law enforcement problem. We have to understand that this is our problem. Amen. And every one of us have a role to play in fighting and addressing this issue. So for me, when I'm called upon to testify, when we're talking about members of Congress, whether that's on a state or a federal level, we're talking about people, right? We're talking yes. about people who oftentimes doesn't get the intense training of what human trafficking is. They have their own ideas and misconception as yes. to what human trafficking is. So that's why you bring in an expert like myself, right? And not only that, I'm even called in on court cases, on legal cases, as an expert witness for the government, right? To testify about what trafficking is, what it is.
You
that
you testify in court as well. You yes. go to court as yes. expert witness.
As
go
an ahead. Expert witness there again, to help people understand what trafficking actually is and the importance of legislation, to have legislation in place to respond to it. And we're talking about a variety of legislation. When I was recently before the US Congress, my ask there was to implement federal legislation for the victims of trafficking that have been prosecuted as a direct result of their trafficking.
Oh my goodness.
And we have to understand that because of how complex this issue is, victims who are clearly victims who are being forced by their traffickers to commit crimes are oftentimes charged.
And the trafficker gets away with it.
And the trafficker gets away. And when we're talking about a criminal enterprise, right? When you just look at a criminal enterprise and how these criminals set up their criminal enterprise, they set it up in a way to evade criminal charges, right? So they instruct the victim to carry out these crimes, right? Yeah. And there are consequences if the victim does not carry out the crime. But when law enforcement comes in and they say, well, officer, I didn't do anything. She booked a hotel room. She drove them across state line. She told them what to do. And the victim actually did those things. But under whose direction?
Under whose direction? Doing them.
Right? And what would be the consequences if that individual do not carry out those actions? Those consequences are very severe, right? And I like to explain to people, to give people that visual, that it's torture. Those consequences we're talking about, it's torture. Whatever comes to your mind when you hear the word torture happens to trafficking victims.
I can very well imagine that. And sometimes the victims are killed.
Yes.
Are killed.
You know, I connect with law enforcement officers around the country. And I was talking to a specific law enforcement officer. I'm going to keep his location confidential just because of how the nature of the cases that he deal with. And he's dealing with the Russian mob, right? That has an establishment that he is aware that trafficking occurs at this establishment. And when he goes in and he gets, he says so far he's gotten 5 witnesses that all disappeared.
All disappeared. That's
all
a key
disappeared.
Word.
One of them committed suicide by jumping off a building.
My goodness. Jumping?
And is it
jumping?
And is it jumping or
pushed?
Or pushed, right? Right?
Yeah.
So yeah. when we're looking at the dangers that lies within, you know, we have our officers out there, they're working. But that victim statement is important. And when we're talking about all levels of criminals here, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about your low-level criminals and your high-level criminals that go up to these mobs.
Shamir, we are aware that some terrorist groups engage in human trafficking.
Oh, yeah.
In order to fund their operations.
Yes.
We also know that human trafficking on a global scale is a multi-trillion dollar enterprise.
The International Labor Organization estimates that human trafficking is a $150 billion industry. Because here's the thing, right? When we're talking about human trafficking and when we follow the media as it relates to trafficking, people believe that sex trafficking is the most prevalent form of trafficking, but it's actually labor trafficking.
Labor.
Right? And yes. There's a website that I encourage our listeners to visit. It's called slaveryfootprints.org. That is slaveryfootprints.org. Right? And when you go on that...
Slaveryfootprints.org.
Yes.
Okay.
And when you go on that website, you can put in your everyday household products and find out how many slaves work for you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. You can find out if the product is made by slave labor, right? So oftentimes you go to the supermarket, right? And you see a product and it's labeled fair trade. You ever wonder what does that mean?
That no slave labor is used, eh?
Right? That means that company has looked in their supply chain to ensure that slave labor, and when we're talking about slave labor, we're talking about sweatshops, right?
Yes,
there's
yes,
a demand
yes.
by there's a demand by society for cheaper goods and labor, right? If we go to a store and we see a shirt for $5 and the same shirt over there for $50, we're going to buy the $5 shirt.
Yeah, but it's made by slave labor.
Right? And we have to understand, in one second, we have to understand in that context, why can that shirt be $5? Is because the individuals who made that shirt, they were either not paid or probably paid 10 cents for making that shirt. So when the company sells that shirt back for $5, they have been well off. They definitely made a profit. Why the $50 shirt, they have to sell it for $50 in order to make a profit.
And Shamir, really, some years ago, there was quite an uproar with a major brand, I won't name the brand here, that were selling its products at very high prices, but paying mere cents to produce them.
Mm-hmm.
Before we end this interview, I want you to explain a little bit about the types of victims, in particular, women and girls who are victims of sex trafficking, and what are we supposed to be looking for, and how do we help to prevent that?
Okay. So there is no cookie cutter approach to this. When we're talking about the victims, a victim can be anyone.
And we also know there are male victims of prison sex trafficking.
So there are females, there are males, there are children, and there are adults. And oftentimes when we talk about this, you hear individuals say she, her, but there are males and individuals who identify as LGBTQ, right? Yeah. You have populations that are targeted, vulnerable communities, right? That are targeted for trafficking. So we have the LGBTQ youth that are targeted. We have people of color that are targeted, right? To be recruited for trafficking. But victims, I've worked with a law enforcement officer, 85% of his cases came from wealthy families.
Wow.
Right?
That's amazing.
When we are talking about, I have spoken to parents and I've had parents personally tell me, my child will never and can never be trafficked. And it's important for people to understand the same morals, principles, and values that you instill in your children are the same morals, principles, and values that the trafficker will come and use to lure them into being trafficked.
Wow.
When we're talking about preventive measures for this, we have children and we have people who don't have support networks, who don't have someone who believe them. Since I've been talking about this, I can't tell you how many people have come to me and privately said, this is also my story, but my mother didn't believe me. This person didn't believe me, right? There were no one around, right? Let's not talk about in certain cultures where child sexual abuse is swept under the rug, right? Which can then make one vulnerable to be trafficked. Right? You're going to destroy the family name if you say that this happened to you, right? So what I would encourage people in terms of responding to this, one, believe survivors. If someone comes to you and say this has been their experience, believe them. It is not your job to try to put two and two together. And everyone, it takes a special kind of human to hear about the adversity of another and something inside of them don't stir up. It doesn't stir up something. It takes a special type of human to say, okay, that happened to you. Okay. The majority of us, when we hear of how others have been impacted through adversity, we want to do something. And oftentimes we don't know what to do. So I'm going to tell you, one, believe these individuals. Try to connect them to some type of service or resource. Find out what their needs are. Your own misconceptions, egos, biases, check that at the door. Yes. If you think you're coming in with the cape that you're Superman and you're going to rescue, that's not what this is about. You can't rescue anyone. Right? Mm-hmm. So we need to have conversation and find out what it is that you need. How can I help you? When you come in contact with the victim, the question should not be what happened to you. It should be, how can I help you?
Right. Including in a recovery phase.
Including in that recovery phase too, right? We need to really report these cases to law enforcement if that's what the victim desire, right? Because law enforcement is only as good as investigating these based on the tips that they're getting.
Yes.
Right? We need to be talking to our legislators about addressing these issues, letting our legislators know that we care. Members of their constituents care about this issue, and we're relying on you to do something, because if you don't, we vote you in and we will vote you out.
Exactly. But the general public is not fully aware of what is at stake and the scope of human trafficking. And that's why it is so important to have people like you on this program talking about the subject. And Shamir, I could sit here for hours.
Yes, I could talk about this all day.
Listening to you explain all the nuances on human trafficking and guiding us, guiding the general public and what they should be doing. Unfortunately, we can't do this. And so I would consider this to be a deposit, a down payment on this subject, and to engage with you again in the future, to continue this conversation and to expand the scope of listenership, maybe in other formats, so that the general public can be aware of the scourge of human trafficking, and that we all owe it to the victims and to each other, to humanity, to be proactive and to be constantly advocating to end human trafficking. Any last word from you?
Yes. I want to say, parents who are listening, talk to your children about trafficking before the trafficker speaks to them about trafficking. Oftentimes I hear from parents, my child is too young. Your child is not too young. The trafficker don't care about how young your child is. And for individuals who may be presenting with the opportunity, I want to say, follow your intuition. There's this thing that we're born with called your gut feeling or intuition. If something tells you, you know, when you get that thing in your belly that says something isn't right, listen to it. Follow that. That is the body's alarm of warning us against danger, right? Follow your intuition. And that's all I have to say. There's so much more I can say, but I want to leave people.
And Shamir, I just want you to know that you're a special person.
Thank you.
You're a phenomenal woman. You have been a victim and you have been a liberator.
Yes, I'm a liberator.
Liberator.
Victim part is gone.
Yes. You have put that behind you and you have transformed your experiences into helping others. I applaud you for this and I thank you for spending this time with me on Real Talk.
Thank you so much for having me. And let's do a part two. There's so much to talk about.
Part two is coming up. Thank you for listening. This is Ambassador Curtis Moore on Real Talk.